Welcome to VPG's Virtual Water Cooler Chat Podcast, a platform that celebrates the rich tapestry of professional diversity, with a particular emphasis on empowering women. We aim to foster diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility, DEIA, for all, while recognizing and championing the achievements of everyone as a central pillar of our journey. In our conversations, we explore a wide spectrum of backgrounds, experiences, and perspectives, creating a vibrant mosaic that enriches our collective understanding and strengthens our commitment to diversity and empowerment. Today, Ashley Chung, principal and founder of VPG, had the pleasure of chatting with Meredith. Meredith is an associate solicitor at the United States Patent and Trademark Office, USPTO, where she serves as legal counsel on intellectual property law matters. At the USPTO, Ms. Schoenfeld defends decisions by the Patent Trial and Appeal Board, among other responsibilities. Ms. Schoenfeld is a founding member of the USPTO's Artificial Intelligence, AI, and Emerging Technology, ET, Working Group. This working group is comprised of AI experts from across the agency and has been responsible for several initiatives at the USPTO, including the issuance of Request for Comments, reports on AI and intellectual property policy, and the formation of the AI-ET partnership, which was announced by Director Vidal in June 2022. Ms. Schoenfeld also acts as a government liaison to the National AI Advisory Committee, NAIAC. Prior to her position at the USPTO, Ms. Schoenfeld worked as a senior patent attorney at Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico and as an associate at a large IP law firm in Washington, D.C. Ms. Schoenfeld is a graduate of Georgetown University Law School and holds a BSc in Mechanical Engineering and Applied Mathematics from the University of Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon, Meredith. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Thank you, Ashley. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. Thank you so much for, you know, agreeing to be a guest on Virtual Water Cooler Chat. I really, really enjoy getting to know you. You're the first one that actually take me to a soccer game. So, you know, that is very, very special. So we're going to dive right in.
Sure.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Right now, I'm at the USPTO, the Patent and Trademark Office. I'm in the Office of General Counsel. I'm in the Solicitor's Office. So I work on a combination of things. You know, our main job is to defend the PTO in litigation in like the patent and trademark fields. But we also get involved with a lot of policy things. And that's actually been the part of my job that I've enjoyed the most. I've gotten to do some details as a part of my job, and I'm also on the AI working team. So I've gotten to kind of explore and learn about a lot of different issues that, you know, affect patent law or affect science and technology and innovation and all of those things. So I really, you know, have enjoyed the experience of PTO, which does allow me to, you know, kind of see different things and try different roles and learn about different things besides just my job that I have. So that's where I'm at now. And how I got there was I started my career at the patent office, actually. So when I graduated college, I was an examiner at the PTO, and I did that for 4 years. And I went to law school during the evenings when I was at the patent office because I knew that I wanted to be a patent attorney. So actually, when I was in engineering in undergrad, we had a patent attorney that came to speak to our class. And when he spoke, I thought, well, this sounds like something that would be a really good fit for me because I did like learning about the science and engineering, but I also liked the sort of critical thinking and writing of the legal field. So I thought that would be a really good combination. So, you know, I went to the patent office and I went to law school at night at Georgetown in DC. And from there, I wound up going to a law firm, the Finnegan Law Firm. And I practiced there for 6 years. And then I decided that I wanted to try something else. And so I went out to Los Alamos, New Mexico. And I worked as a patent attorney at a research lab I wanted something just totally different. Like, I had never lived in New Mexico. I basically only lived in like East Coast cities. I went to school in Philadelphia. I grew up in New York. I, went to school again in DC. So I decided I wanted to just try something completely different. So I went out to New Mexico. And I, worked at the lab, and it was a great experience. I met wonderful people there. I got to experience the outdoors and, see the blue skies and see all of the great scenery of the Southwest. And I got to learn so much about laboratories and science and tech transfer and just all kinds of different skills. I enjoyed that position. But I decided I did want to come back to DC to be closer to my family and some other factors. So I got a job with the solicitor's office, and I've been there for 12 years.
Wow.
So
that's quite a story. New Mexico, I actually, when you were talking about that, I was thinking a friend of mine who did her residency in New Mexico. This is a college friend from Kansas, and she went to med school, and eventually she went to KU Med, and then I think she finally did her residency with her now husband in New Mexico. Now she is in Portland, Oregon.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yes. And her daughters are super adorable. The eldest one just started her freshman year at Berkeley. So that's good. I mean, New Mexico, it definitely, the Southwest is a very interesting area that I have not quite explored. Do you feel that the people are different, very different from the East Coast or anywhere that you have lived?
I think the culture is different, and New Mexico is very steeped in culture. I mean, they have a very interesting history with, the Spanish culture, and also there's a lot of Native American culture. And New Mexico, I believe this is correct, I'm almost 100% sure, but is one of the few states where it's actually, majority not white. So I think that is a it brings kind of a more diverse culture and have, kind of different aspects of that. And the pace is definitely different. I mean, if you visit New Mexico, they will say sort of their motto is mañana, which means tomorrow. and I would say growing up in New York, we have the New York minute. so it's definitely a different pace, but I do think, people are people, and we definitely have more in common with each other as human beings than differences. So I think it's good to learn about different cultures and learn about different experiences and learn about the history and the art and the natural beauty of a place. But we all are unique in our own ways, but also human.
That's cool. Can we talk a little bit about Meredith outside of work?
Sure. As you know, there's a pretty big side of Meredith outside of work. I do like doing a lot of things. I'm definitely someone that I think everyone knows if you want someone to do something with or to be up for something, you can definitely reach out to me because I love just learning things, exploring things. I love all kinds of, different music. I love seeing live music. I love theater. I love sports. I love watching sports, participating in sports. So basically, all aspects of life I'm interested in doing and learning and experiencing. I think I've always been that way. As a kid, I always wanted to do things and see things and read about things, not one to sit still very much. So, I think Meredith outside of work is on the go a lot, and, up for trying new things. And, I love connecting with people, seeing people. I'm very lucky to have, close friends and family and people that I do make the effort to get together with because, it's great to connect virtually, and that's definitely an option and works out well. But I like connecting with people in person too a lot.
If you had to use three words to describe yourself, what would those three words be?
I would say definitely curious. Like I said, I just want to learn things. I would say that I try to be very open-minded. You know, one of the things my stepfather said to me, this phrase, which I really take to heart, is only a fool never changes his mind. So I think it's really important to not just stick with what you know and say this is the only way or the best way, but really be open-minded to different ideas and thoughts. And I do try my best. And I think, which you will probably anticipate, my word for myself, hopeful. you know, as you know, hope is my middle name. And I take that seriously. I think it's, you know, it's really important to have hope and to give hope. And, you know, I do see kind of hope and kindness as being linked together. And so I do try to live with that, you know, positivity close to my heart.
So I agree with all three. And I think that it's not a coincidence that you fall into the patent field where innovation and curiosity drives, you know, the technology, and that you are interested in AI, artificial intelligence. I really do believe that you are also very kind. And the fact that you are in the patent industry, government or not, you have your life, but you try, in my opinion, you try so hard to be supportive to other people. And I think that is really a rare quality. And I do think that you are open-minded. So your stepfather, I'm glad that he brought that to your attention. Hope is, I think I've talked to you about this before, is that I read like an acronym one day. We went to the Hope concert with the Surgeon General. Mm-hmm. That was,
yes,
not something that I would, and I actually saw Hello Black in person.
And then, yeah, that was amazing.
That was really amazing. I really love, like, I really love that song, I Need a Dollar, you know, something like that. And then there was just so many really talented and diverse people that will really just make huge difference during COVID, and now being able to get given them the awards and the medals so that they can actually, hopefully that will inspire other people to also be more selfless and be more thinking about what we can actually do to offer and pay back to our community. So thank you for taking me, like, some of the major experience in my life, Meredith brought me there, like DC United game.
I'm happy to hear that, because I do, you know, I like bringing people together and inviting people to things and, you know, having new experiences. And sometimes the things we go to are not as successful. You know, I know, the other day I went to a show with Cockley that I picked out, and I didn't know that much about it. And it was a little different and darker than we thought. So it's not always a success, but it's still good to, like, have the experience and learn and see things. And although we were talking about it, that it was kind of dark, but then it did resonate with us. So we did think, well, you know, it's still sort of a worthwhile thing to see, because it stayed with us and made us think. So
this is why being open-minded is very important. You know, because if we don't, then how would we know what is not dark? How,
right,
where do we get the point of comparison, right? So we have a local high school here, Rock Ridge High, that actually has performances. And I think they are putting on Rent. And I told my friend, I said that, I really want to see that. And I said, maybe I'll take my mom. But then I'm thinking, like, that might be not an appropriate show for my mom. Because I don't know exactly what she would think about that.
Right, right.
So, yeah, because I had the soundtrack before. And because it's come out from a while back. And then, so my friend, I was asking him, I was like, do you want to go see it? She goes, like, I've seen it on Off-World, right, already. I'm like, all right. So, you know, if I am so inclined and decided to go, I might just, like, pick up a ticket if they have it available and just go and see that show by myself. I think that would be awesome. I really do enjoy Broadway show and even off Broadway. And so Next time we have like those Hope concert, let me know. I'll be there.
You should definitely see Rent. It is a great show. The music's great. You know, it is a little sad, but it's good. And I also do believe that, I mean, I see things myself. I go to events myself. I think that it's great to do that. I mean, you'll be with people that like-minded people. So sometimes you'll wind up talking to someone. You know, sometimes it just forces you to meet new people. Like, you know, even when I went to your book thing, I mean, I knew you. I didn't know some of the other people, but you know, because I was by myself and you were the star of the show, so I didn't want to bother you as much. You know, I did wind up talking to some people that I wouldn't have otherwise talked to. And it's just great to know that you can enjoy your own company. So I definitely encourage people to experience things by themselves and don't be afraid to go to things, either professional things, personal things. It's a good experience.
The test that I usually would ask people would be, would you go to a fancy restaurant by yourself or just any restaurant by yourself?
I would, yeah. So I don't tend to gravitate towards fancy restaurants because I'm not such a foodie. So it's like I feel like it's kind of wasted on me, the experience. But if there was a place I wanted to try, or yeah, I would definitely go to a restaurant by myself.
Yeah, because some people are not so inclined to do that. They just need to have people to go with them. I actually do enjoy spending a lot of time on my own because I'm kind of an ambivert. And I really do think that I'm an introvert because I really enjoy, and also my energy comes from just sitting here writing. So that's why I like writing books and stuff like that, meeting deadline on my own. And so it's kind of nice that I have my own basement room to basically do my thing. But, you know, running a business and doing a lot of things, especially with the next generation of like the people that are much younger than I am and with very different values than I am. So I wanted to pick your brain. What is your perception of diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility? How do you view that, especially how this will drive our society with the younger generation?
As I said before, I think, you know, being open-minded is something that I try to be and something that I value. And I think, you know, open-minded definitely helps with just seeing different people's points of view. And I think it's very useful to have different points of view. And, you know, you mentioned I might have introduced you to some new things. And because I do try to open my net wide, like I've been introduced to new things because people have different experiences than me that you can learn from. And I think, you know, we all have so much of our own biases based on our experiences and not even just from racial or religious or just, you know, all of your experiences that you have, the, you know, where you grew up, the parents you grew up with, the schools you went to, the places you've lived, the, you know, foods you've been introduced to, like those all form your opinions. And, you know, you're inherently going to be biased based on those experiences. And it's so important to realize that people have had just completely different experiences than you. So I think a lot of the time, like we just think, oh, this is the right way because this is the way I do it, or this is the normal way. But you are a product of the things that you have absorbed in your life, like, you know, whether you realize it or not. And I think, you know, sometimes people do have a hard time seeing their own biases and seeing that, you know, the experience is totally different for someone else. And, you know, you have not been in someone else's shoes. And, you know, I think it's great to try to learn about being in someone else's shoes and certainly reading and meeting people and getting culture from different places like helps you understand their experience, but you don't know their experience. You know, this is kind of not quite talking about diversity, equity, and inclusion exactly, but to me, it means just kind of being open to everyone's viewpoint and hearing everyone's viewpoint and accepting everyone's viewpoint as their viewpoint and not necessarily trying to change it because you think you know better. And I do find, I am upset by the a lot of the division that occurs today. I think, you know, there's so many polarizations and so many assumptions that are made. And it's, you know, well, you like this, or you must be that, or you know, and I do, I think that's really harmful. And so I think, you know, if we can listen to each other more and really try to accept what people say more and, you know, be open-minded, I think that does take us at least one step closer to a better world.
I think that sometimes we don't always have to agree with people. We
right.
can also agree to disagree.
Yes.
That's one perception, right? I mean, it's like, I can assume that you would understand my experience, but the fact that you are being open-minded, or anyone's being open-minded, not assume and not verify facts. You know, if you,
right.
like, you know, instead of assuming what I want to be called or like certain things about me, ask.
Right.
Like, I might have a preference on certain things, and then there might be a certain things that is very cultural oriented that you just have to ask. And then I think part of it is that a lot of the society, I do agree with you, that is very polarized. And I think sometimes, especially in litigation, we do not necessarily have the time to be thoughtful to people. Because we're
right.
running from one deadline to another. It's like, in the past, when I was doing work in like litigation, and I can barely, like, I have so many deadlines to meet. I'm generally a thoughtful person, and I take that with, I give other people a courtesy to know that people are not always naturally like a bad person or with
right.
bad intention. But when you have deadlines and, you know, the clock, it's like, you have a midnight filing, that's it. If you're past 1 minute, you miss that deadline. So I think sometimes that people would need to be more, like you said, keeping it open-minded and then communicate and not assume, which is in my book. I always ask
right.
my I kids,
yeah.
I was like, what does assume do, you know? And then
right.
so they would like repeat and anything. So from those micro learning moments, that is actually something that I really have taken to heart, because after working, this is Chinese American, working in the patent litigation field for over 2 decades. And prior to that, I was doing like construction litigation.
Right.
I don't know that you see a lot of Asian American women in that field.
Right.
And so it's like, I don't know that I would actually find a lot of like-minded people with same color, or, you know, and I also did not used to speak up. I can talk right now. Most of the time, I was just a workhorse. So I really did think traditionally that if I just like put my head down, just keep working, that's all I need to do. You know, I'm not looking for to be like running any office, and I'm not trying to be influencer or anything like that. So I was like happy being able to make a decent living, and then also going to travel. But then at some point, it became not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's the next topic that I wanted to talk to you about, balancing between personal and professional fulfillment. Obviously, you're a very successful patent attorney. At the
you.
USPTO, and I love the fact that you are so supportive of not only me, but like of anything that, you know, you're just a very kind soul, and I do appreciate that. Before, I wasn't, like, for example, I wasn't really thinking about, I was very slid toward professional achievement, and not trying to be number one, it's just that that's
right.
how I was raised.
Mm-hmm.
And in law, a lot of people, I would think, that have what Arthur Brooks talked about, as a success addiction. This is like we wanted to win that case, and after that, let's do another one. We are like number one in IP, or we are number one in construction law or whatever. So people like naturally, there's certain type of personality, mostly type A or super type A, that go into law or medicine. So then I think that's what Arthur Brooks was talking about in the book From Strength to Strength. And after you get all of those professional achievements, then what? How does Meredith feel about that? And what do you do for your personal fulfillment?
I think that's a good point. And I think, like you said, a lot of people in all kinds of fields, you know, that you sort of have checklists. You are like, okay, I made it through law school. I made it to this point. And, you know, I think I'm at a point, midlife point, where you are at a point where you kind of evaluate, you know, like you said, you've had certain successes. I've had a pretty varied career. I've done a lot of things. So I think, you know, it is a reflection point for me, where it is a situation where I look at, okay, well, what things do I actually enjoy doing? You know, what are the things that I find I'm excited about or passionate about? And you know, obviously with work, there's lots of daily tasks and life as well. Like, you're never going to be like, I love every single minute of every single day doing anything. You know, let's be real, but yeah, you know, as I've sort of weaved through my career and done certain things, you know, like you said, with litigation, there's certain challenges about litigation that I like, but it's also not where my heart is, because I'm not that win at all costs kind of person. That's why kind of being at the government is nice, because you don't have to fight till the death. You don't have a client that's driving it. You can say, well, here's where I think the reasonable position is, and this is the position we should take. And you get much, you know, less pushback on that as the government, because as the government, you know, we're allowed to be reasonable and kind of take the best path. And as I mentioned, you know, I think I've also shifted towards different roles at the agency, more policy type roles, to, you know, accommodate that I'm interested in learning about things and trying to figure out, you know, what are the best policies. And, you know, that kind of speaks to me more about gathering data and learning things and, you know, figuring out paths forward that are good for everybody, instead of a litigation position where it's just okay, win or lose, and you're so focused. So I think in your professional career, and it's not that you can dictate everything, and sometimes you have to work on things that maybe you don't feel as passionate about, but if you can really identify, okay, what are the things I really like, and seek out those kinds of opportunities, I think, you know, it's great if you can get fulfillment in your job. And it, you know, like I said, it can just be with certain projects, you know, certain things that you work on that you're able. You know, with I'm working on the AI team at the PTO, and we're trying to figure out, you know, responsible use of AI. Like, that's, you know, part of the government mission. And, you know, that's something I feel good about, because we've talked about AI a lot. It's got a lot of great potential. It has some scary parts, and we need to figure out how to navigate that. So, you know, that's something that I was able to kind of coalesce with, like, my personal and professional. And I think from my personal life, I do find fulfillment in these roles where I am helping more. And I think that's true of a lot of people. I know that there's been different studies that talk about, you know, volunteering, you know, makes the person that volunteers feel good, and it does connect you with the community. And I mean, there's all these benefits of volunteering, and there's so many opportunities to volunteer, you know, kind of ad hoc, where you can just show up once. Basically, if you talk to anyone in any sort of situation, they'll be happy to have someone help with something. So either professionally at work, you know, if you know your colleague's slammed and you just say, hey, do you need help with something, or do you want me to help you with that? Or if you know, I love my local library, so I try to find ways to volunteer there and just get in touch with them and say, well, what do you guys need help with, or what would be something I could do? I would say volunteering in whatever way makes you happy, and whatever projects, is always something that will make you feel good and fulfilled. And then just figuring out kind of what kinds of projects or what kinds of roles you really enjoy and seeking those out as much as you can, knowing that it's not going to all be what you want to do all the time, because that's just not how usually life works.
Well, I mean, I am really glad to hear that, because I really do think very highly of you, mostly because I feel like that you have a very, well, seemingly, right? You have a very balanced, I can only see what I can see. I don't know what struggle you have. So just like that, you might not know what struggle I have, right? A lot of people, especially in private law, they will be like mostly with the deadline, things that they wanted to do may not be doing, and they will compensate with very expensive vacations or buying the most like fancy cars or something like that. I did do some vacation, not the most fancy one, but I did go to some amazing places. I just booked my trip to Norway and Iceland in May.
Oh, wow. That'll be great.
Yeah. Well, I need to be not like cold enough. I mean, I think it's going to be maybe 40 or 50s in Norway around that time. But like this year, when I left my previous job, I really thought that the first place I'm going to hit is Australia and New Zealand. Then COVID happened. So I still have not gotten there. And anything that I'm going to do in Australia and New Zealand is actually going to be, I really want to get used to how to do virtual patent gateway so that I could do my work virtually. Because I mean, I really do my work virtually, but there are limitations. Like, for example, if you have to do your service or something like that, I need to have a team. So one of the things that it has, the next point that I'm going to talk to is that with all of the technology, especially AI, and the next generation, because I have actually really rely on my younger team to teach me a lot of things, how to use ChatGPT effectively. Mm-hmm. For example, I had, I was just talking to someone and doing like some QC of exhibit, and then she is a Mac user. I have Mac, but I'm not really all that fluent in some of the things.
Yeah, same.
She's like 22. And so one of the things that she's on her Mac, and we were going through Zoom, and then all of a sudden she would go like this, and then there's firework in the background. Apparently that's a Mac thing, right? I didn't know that. So I was like going like this, and I was like, how did you get the bubble? I couldn't get the bubble to work. And then she goes like, hold the thumb up, go like this. But I'm like, but I'm on a PC. So when I'm on my iPhone, I would go like, but it's not working. She goes like, hold this steady and all this. And then all the fireworks in the background works, right? I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I said that when you leave, you have to promise me that you are going to keep me as a friend, because I am going to be an advisor. And she goes like, of course, you are like my dog's virtual godmother. I did not know that. But that was really, really awesome. So with the next generation, they use technology very differently. And sometimes it's like, I have someone that actually did a book review of Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point. So I assigned book report, because I know that someone else would said it better than I would. And I really want to drive that point across. And it would be good for them to sort of like, so we have a newsletter called The Wonderlist. So I'm getting, you get that, right?
Yes, I do get it.
So I'm just going to be like saying that I'm very proud of that newsletter. We have to go through a lot. And in the beginning, it's like only a couple of people. But then at some point, I decided that, you know what, I'm just going to have like different contributor, so that they can actually talk about what they want and get the viewpoint across, either travel or like live or anything like that. So I assigned different books, The Tao of Self-Confidence, you know, Gravitars, and I've actually started reading Malcolm Gladwell's The Tipping Point. Actually, I listened to the audiobook.
Okay.
And so I've read like David and the Goliath and all this, but you know, those are not necessarily the type of books that our Gen Zers will gravitate toward. So I signed a book to one of my our young ones. And I've kind of know her writing style and stuff like that. And at the end, she was like, "When do you want me to give you the report?" And I said, "Well, you know, just meet it by this deadline." So I'm teaching deadline, and I'm having like making sure that they actually have that right. So people was like, "You give them book report?" I'm like, "No, same difference." But you know,
I
read that. I was like, "Wait a minute!" I was looking at the review before. It's like coming out for February, so I'm refinalizing it. When I read it, I was like, very, very detailed analysis. So I was really impressed. Not that I should be surprised, but I was very impressed because I see the distinct differences in the writing style. I asked a couple of people, I polled a question. I'm like, what do you guys think about this? And the people was like, I thought it was pretty good. So I need to confirm one thing. So I have my Zoom meeting.
Okay.
And I said that, great job. May I ask you an honest question? Did you use ChatGPT to do any of this generative AI? Yeah. So no, it really doesn't do something like that. No, okay, well, I'll take you for a word for it. And then, of course, I also probe additional questions.
Right.
So what did you really think about this? And then she said, well, I thought that Malcolm Gladwell was really, really had a lot of foresight because the book was written a while back. And then some of the societal issues, the thing that he talked about, suicide and also the smoking and everything, that really has a lot of implication in today's society issues. So I thought that it was really cool because, but for me assigning that book, only that they were reading it on their own.
Right.
So that was really an interesting way of making an impact to the next gen. And vice versa, because there are a lot of things that I wouldn't have done. So you do in your life, professional or personal, what are some of the things that you find most intriguing when interacting with the younger generation?
My experience with interacting with the younger generation is mostly due to my stepdaughters who are 12 and 15. You know, so I think that their experiences are a lot different than mine growing up. I think with the social media and just, you know, when I grew up, we didn't have any of that. So, you know, I graduated high school in 1994. So we didn't have, you know, any social media, any internet, cell phones, none of that. So I think one of the things that I find very interesting is their sense of time and showing up and making plans because they're so used to just being able to be in touch with people. And I think this has happened to the older generation too, and just being more fluid. You know, like when I was in high school, it was like, okay, we're meeting at this diner at this place. And there was no way to tell someone you weren't going to be there. I'm running late. Like, so you just had to show up on time. And like now it's like, you can be like, oh, well, I'm still doing this, or, oh, I, you know, so it's like, I just feel like the kind of expectation has changed because you have just so much more communication. And I think just in general, you know, they're able to communicate with people so much more and see what everyone else is doing. And I think that some ways that's really good. And especially over COVID, when they were alone and isolated, you know, they were able to at least have some connection with other people. But I think it can be dangerous because you are seeing and comparing. And I think that is the main thing at this age, you know, the younger generation, where you don't have your full self-confidence and sense of self yet, and you're still kind of figuring out your sense of self. And, you know, there's just so many more opportunities to compare or have people comment on things. And, you know, I think that can be really hard. And I do wonder about kind of growing up in that environment where it's harder to just be your own person. And, you know, even though there are even a lot of TikToks that talk about doing that, and there is that message that is sent, I feel like it might be actually harder to implement that message when there's all these comments and noise going on. So I think that is intriguing about the next generation. And I think them figuring out like careers and what they want to do and working, you know, I think that is a different experience. I do feel like, and, you know, obviously it's not true for everyone my age and, you know, it's my experience, but I kind of just look to like, what would be a good career? What's practical? What's focused? And, you know, kind of do what you're told mentality of, you know, show up, do the work that you're supposed to do. And I think, you know, now there is more of a feeling of, oh, I don't necessarily want to give up my personal life. I don't want to, you know, some of the things that we touched on a little bit earlier about, you know, finding things you enjoy or not making work like the biggest priority. I think that is, you know, something that has been told and adopted to the younger generation, which, you know, I think our generation or my generation is learning those messages too and seeing those messages, but it's not what we grow up with. You know, I'm very curious to see like where my stepdaughters end up career-wise and what they wind up doing with their personal lives and time and what kind of adults they'll be. So,
yeah, I completely agree with you. I think social media, especially with that younger generation, there's a lot of pseudo confidence there. And that is covering up the vulnerability. I mean, everybody's just texting, but can you actually have a conversation with a real person?
Right.
Right. That is something that it doesn't matter whether you're introvert or extrovert, and it doesn't matter where you are. That is some life skill that will actually take you further, because it's not only your technical skill that will take you to the next level. I strongly believe your people skill, and I hate to call it soft skill, the people skill that would actually take you to the next level. And what I'm really most concerned about is that, yes, technically, they are coming out as a digital native, but can you carry a conversation?
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that it has, when I talk about like the personal fulfillment, I did not know that that's what made me feel fulfilled, because sometimes my kids drive me crazy. I don't have kids of my own. I was like, why are you not doing this? And then the thing is, like, if I see something wrong, I'm not the type of person that would say, I'm just like, yo.
Right.
You know, when you're running a business, you also, especially in social media, if you upset your younger people, they may go on TikTok and basically just blow up your whole company. Who knows? And not in a good way. And where do you find the balance? But at the same time, like, there were things that I have gone through, the experiences that I wanted to share that will allow people, in my opinion, that would benefit them. So I feel like that I have an obligation if I see something, say something, right? And then so if I see something like, you know, coming from litigations and being like usually very detail oriented, I will see something, I was like, I'm like biting my tongue and trying to come up with like as soft as possible. And now I just give them feedback and then said, okay, it's feedback time.
Right.
So that gives them a little bit of like, don't take any of this personal. This is my opinion. And I think this XYZ need to be done this way. Again, this is my opinion. It doesn't necessarily say that it's better or not. It's just more fitting with what I am trying to push out. So what do you guys think? And the other thing that I think it's been really important, but I have not practiced it well yet, is we are in a society, everybody wants to talk and air our opinion. But one thing that I really want to practice is being the last person to speak. So I am being very conscious when I have on a Zoom, I would like have to bite my tongue to give my feedback. I would basically go through the circle and said, why don't you guys all talk first? Sometimes it kills me because I'm like, oh, I want to say something, you know? It's like, I'm looking at the time, I got to do this, you know? But at the same time, that's like from Simon Sinek, it was like, practice being the last person to speak. Because once you start, even with like body language, people can tell. That is what I have learned. We just finished on-demand course to prep. It's called The Journey of Self-Love. And it's with Shina Yap Chen. And so I put together my like team that has like video editor, computer science and, statistics, but they are like really good at what they do in terms of video editing. And me, I'm just like, you're so lucky I don't have time and nor do I really have the interest to do editing because otherwise you will have a job here. But they just do it so much better on those. But I think the issue is that what I'm really enjoying for my work, besides the filing, and the filing is what really pays my bill and help me pay for them. But what is really important is to utilize those type of projects and set up standards so that they can understand what is deadline, what is accountability. And for me, what I'm learning is technology and also getting a different viewpoint that I normally would not be exposed to. And I thought that was huge.
Yeah,
And
that is.
that's where I'm very lucky right now. I have a group of people that are really, really good. But as sort of like a business owner, well, obviously I would want to keep them for as long as I want to, but I'm not some big company. So I also have to realize and be realistic that after this training, they're going to move on. It really is a test of my own personal strength and integrity in some way. Because I really want to be selfish. It's like, what can I do to like, how much can I pay to afford to keep them here and all these things? But I've actually come to terms that the best thing to do is to, at this part of the journey, when we may meet at this path, is offer what I can afford, I can offer either be like financial or just basically advice, and then offer them connection to take them to the next level. So I really think that that is what I've come to realize is important to me and also to VPG. So I thought that was really interesting how in 4 years I can have a company that actually balanced, not always 50-50%, but somewhat balance, strike that balance between the personal and professional fulfillment. That's what I want to offer. And I really enjoy our chat. If our audience would like to connect with you, do they would LinkedIn or what are the best way
Yes,
to
I'm on LinkedIn, Meredith Schoenfeld. So luckily, there are very few Meredith Schoenfelds in the world, so it's pretty easy to find me. And I'm happy to, connect with people. If anyone has any fun events, I'm happy to, or even not fun events, I like to experience it all.
I'm going to see you at the DIA workshop.
Yes, looking forward to it.
Yes.
Thank
Thank
you
you
so much.
so much, Meredith. I really do appreciate you taking the time.